Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
On today's program, Jill Robbins tells us about a troubling new study on tropical forest loss. Brian Lynn presents this week's technology report. We close with the next part of our U.S. history series. But first, here is Jill Robbins.
A nonprofit environmental group says the amount of tropical forest lost around the world in 2022 was equal to an area the size of Switzerland. Global Forest Watch is an effort supported by the nonprofit World Resources Institute, or WRI, which is based in Washington, D.C. WRI recently released its latest data. The group found that about 41,000 square kilometers of tropical forest was lost in 2022. The effort used forest data collected by the University of Maryland. The report considered forest loss caused by mechanical clearing for agriculture and wood cutting, and natural causes such as fire, wind, and the movements of rivers. The report said more than 40% of the deforestation took place in Brazil. The year 2022 was the final year of former Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro's 4-year term in office. Last year, losses of Brazilian tropical forest, not including forest fires, reached their recent high point since 2005. Current Brazilian President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva has promised to end deforestation in the Amazon. He also was president from 2003 to 2011. The University of Maryland data shows that, if fire is included, about 28,000 square kilometers of Brazilian tropical forest were lost in 2016, the most in the last 20 years. In November 2021, world leaders at a United Nations Environmental Conference in Glasgow, Scotland, pledged to stop deforestation by 2030. But tropical forest loss in 2022 was higher than 2021 levels. 2022 numbers are particularly disheartening, said Francis Seymour, a WRI official. We had hoped by now to see a signal in the data that we were turning the corner on forest loss. Global Forest Watch measured what it called primary forest. That includes mature forests that have not been cleared or regrown recently. The group says such forests protect against climate change because they absorb large amounts of carbon dioxide. Last year's losses in the tropics released 2.7 gigatons of carbon dioxide. That is equal to India's yearly carbon emissions, the report said. Indonesia and Malaysia were able to keep the rate of their forest losses near record lows. The two nations have continued for several years to limit deforestation caused by the palm oil industry. Strict Indonesian policies, like suspending new forestry licenses, helped bring about the change. Other forest-rich nations have struggled to keep up with Asia's progress. The Democratic Republic of the Congo and Bolivia had the greatest losses of tropical forest after Brazil. Reuters reports that some experts blame commodity agriculture for deforestation in Bolivia. Bolivia did not promise to reduce deforestation during the 2021 UN conference in Scotland. The experts say Bolivia's government supports agricultural business expansion. The Global Forest Watch effort found deforestation in 2022 was more than 10,000 square kilometers greater than the reductions required to prevent the loss of any forests by 2030. Rod Taylor is WRI's World Forest Program Director. He said deforestation around the world is trending in the wrong direction. The University of Maryland data showed that the world lost 10% less northern forest in 2022 than 2021. That was because fewer big fires burned in Russian forests. But Russia still lost 43,000 square kilometers of tree cover last year. That is more than the total tropical forest loss around the world. I'm Jill Robbins.
A number of companies have been established to provide a second life for electric vehicle, EV, batteries. But industry experts say such businesses could face major difficulties even as the EV market continues to grow. Reuters news agency reports nearly 50 startup companies have been launched with the aim of buying used EV batteries and reselling them to be used for new purposes. In addition, large car makers such as Mercedes and Nissan have set up their own operations to give EV batteries a second life. The company's founders believe they can find new purposes for used EV batteries from vehicles. The businesses will seek batteries that have been in use for 8 to 10 years. The capacity of EV batteries generally falls below 80 to 85% during those years. Then the companies will repurpose the batteries and sell them. But experts say there is currently a shortage of old EV batteries, and this situation is expected to continue in the foreseeable future. One reason for this is that many people are keeping their vehicles for a longer time. Financial research company S&P Global Mobility notes that EV vehicle owners in the United States are keeping their cars a record 12.5 years. This suggests to experts that many EVs will also stay on the road for years to come, even if their batteries are working below capacity. Hans-Erik Melin is the creator of advisory company Circular Energy Storage, which follows battery sales and prices. He told Reuters the idea that EV batteries are only going to last 8 to 10 years and then owners would swap them out is just not true. Melin added, "It's going to be tricky to make second life work." Elmar Zimmerling is the business development manager for automotive at German second life battery startup Fennecon. He told Reuters that since many EVs built 10 years ago remain in use, there is currently no market for second life batteries. But he predicted a flood of used batteries within the next 5 years. Another issue is that competition from companies using EV batteries to power everything from gasoline-powered vehicles to boats, have driven prices up for used batteries. Circular Energy Storage estimates this pushed prices to $235 per kilowatt hour in late 2022. This is about double the price major car makers pay for new batteries. One example is the long-range Tesla Model 3, which has a 75 kilowatt hour battery. At the estimated rate, the Tesla battery would cost $17,625 on the used market. Some experts say it could even be more profitable for companies to sell needed battery elements rather than whole batteries. The question is, if you have pretty valuable raw materials in a battery, and you ask, how can I get the most out of it? Said Thomas Becker. He is the head of sustainability at German car maker BMW. The company has a second life battery storage facility at its Leipzig plant. The answer, Becker said, is recycling might be better. Demand for used batteries for storage for homes, businesses, or possibly even power grids is likely to rise as renewable energy forms continue to expand. By 2030, worldwide battery capacity for grid storage could grow to 680 gigawatt hours from 16 gigawatt hours at the end of 2021, an estimate by the Paris-based International Energy Agency shows. Britain alone pays around $1.27 billion yearly to turn off wind farms when the grid does not need the power. There is no way yet to store the power because of the battery shortage. Britain also often has to buy electricity from Europe when it cannot produce enough on its own. I'm Brian Lynn.
Brian Lynn joins me now to talk more about this week's technology report. Thanks for being here, Brian.
Of course, Ashley. Thanks for having me.
Today's report explored the current and future market for used electric car batteries. We learned a number of companies have been established to repurpose old EV batteries. But experts note there is currently a big shortage of used batteries. Why is that?
Yes, so one of the reasons is that many EV vehicles on the road today are still not that old, and it will still take several years before those batteries become available for other uses. EV batteries start to lose a percentage of their capacity after 8 to 10 years of use. Also, EV vehicle sales overall have been steadily rising in recent years, and this is expected to continue. So both of these things will eventually help the shortage situation.
Right. And the report also points out that more drivers in general are deciding to drive their vehicles for longer periods. How is this expected to affect the used battery market?
So one thing brought up by some of the experts is that EVs can still operate fine with batteries older than 8 to 10 years, but those batteries affect the vehicle's performance. And one thing affected is driving range. When batteries lose capacity, they have to be charged more often, meaning the distance they can be driven between charges gets shorter. But experts say some drivers might be okay with keeping their EVs after the battery capacity drops and may continue driving shorter distances. If a lot of people decide to do this, it could worsen the used battery shortage.
Okay, well, thanks for answering those questions, Brian, and thanks again for joining me today.
You're welcome. Thank you, Ashley.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember.
A stunning and cowardly strike on the United States. The president vows the killers will pay for this attack on America.
The United States changed as a result of the September 11th terrorist attacks. CBS newsman Dan Rather expressed what many Americans were feeling.
You will remember this day as long as you live.
On the morning of that sunny September day that came to be known as 9/11, the nation came under attack from Al-Qaeda, an extremist group led by Osama bin Laden. Its targets were world-famous buildings representing America's economic and military power. Al-Qaeda operatives hijacked four American passenger airplanes. The hijackers were from Middle Eastern countries. Each group included a pilot trained to fly two kinds of Boeing airliners, the 757 and the 767. At 8:46 on that morning, one group of hijackers flew a Boeing 767 into the North Tower of the World Trade Center in New York City. 17 minutes later, another group flew a second 767 into the Trade Center's South Tower. The planes exploded in fireballs that sent clouds of smoke into the air. The intense heat of the burning jet fuel from the planes caused structural failures that brought down both buildings. About an hour after the first plane hit the World Trade Center, another group of Al-Qaeda operatives flew a 757 airliner into the Pentagon, the headquarters of the Defense Department in Arlington, Virginia. The plane exploded against a wall of the huge building where more than 20,000 people worked. A fourth group had taken control of another 757, but some of the passengers on that flight, United 93, had heard about the terrorist attacks through phone calls to their families. Several passengers and crew members attempted to retake control of the plane. It crashed near the town of Shanksville, Pennsylvania. Investigators later said the hijackers probably planned to attack the Capitol, a major government building in Washington, D.C., where Congress meets. There was also concern that the White House could have been a target. The 9/11 attacks saw the worst loss of lives on American soil since Japan attacked Pearl Harbor in 1941. That attack caused the United States to enter World War II.
The pictures of airplanes flying into buildings, fires burning, huge structures collapsing, have filled us with disbelief, terrible sadness, and a quiet, unyielding anger.
As expressed by President George W. Bush on 9/11, the attacks left Americans in a state of shock and disbelief. But that was soon replaced by anger and a resolve that such events would not be allowed to happen again.
These acts of mass murder were intended to frighten our nation into chaos and retreat. But they have failed. Our country is strong. A great people has been moved to defend a great nation. Terrorist attacks can shake the foundations of our biggest buildings, but they cannot touch the foundation of America. These acts shattered steel, but they cannot dent the steel of American resolve.
At Ground Zero, the site of the World Trade Center destruction, rescue efforts continued into the night.
New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani was asked if Arab American or Muslim groups in New York might be targeted due to the nature of the attacks.
Just the opposite. They will receive extra protection. The particular individuals responsible and the groups responsible, that's up to law enforcement, and it's up to the United States government to figure out. And citizens of New York should, even if they have anger, which is understandable, it isn't their place to get involved in this. Then they're just participating in the kind of activity we just witnessed. And New Yorkers are not like that.
And Giuliani spoke of the strength of spirit of the people of his city.
People tonight should say a prayer for the people that we've lost and be grateful that we're all here. And tomorrow, New York is going to be here, and we're going to rebuild, and we're going to be stronger than we were before.
On September 20th, President Bush went before a joint session of Congress to declare a war on terror.
Our war on terror begins with Al-Qaeda, but it does not end there. It will not end until every terrorist group of global reach has been found, stopped, and defeated.
President Bush explained that the war on terror would be different from other wars.
Our response involves far more than instant retaliation and isolated strikes. Americans should not expect one battle, but a lengthy campaign, unlike any other we have ever seen. We will starve terrorists of funding, turn them one against another, drive them from place to place, until there is no refuge or no rest. And we will pursue nations that provide aid or safe haven to terrorism. Every nation in every region now has a decision to make. Either you are with us or you are with the terrorists. From this day forward, any nation that continues to harbor or support terrorism will be regarded by the United States as a hostile regime.
President Bush demanded that the Taliban rulers of Afghanistan stop sheltering Osama bin Laden and surrender him. The president also called on the Taliban to close terrorist training camps in Afghanistan. The Taliban refused. They demanded evidence that Osama bin Laden had been involved in the attacks of 9/11. They said that if such evidence was provided, he would be tried in an Islamic court. The United States refused to provide evidence. On October 7th, the United States and Britain launched airstrikes against Taliban targets. What became known as the War on Terror had begun. Tribal groups from the opposition Northern Alliance led a ground attack. But suicide bombers had killed their leader, Ahmad Shah Massoud, on September 9th, 2 days before the 9/11 attacks. By November, Taliban control began to collapse in several provinces. Taliban forces fled Kabul, the capital. But the ouster of the Taliban government did not mean the end of the war on terror. Some of President Bush's advisors had long supported an invasion of Iraq. As early as October 2001, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld suggested that military action against Iraq was possible. Government officials accused Iraq of having links to terrorist groups like Al-Qaeda. They noted that Iraqi leader Saddam Hussein had used chemical weapons, and they said he was seeking to develop biological and nuclear weapons as well. In October 2001, Congress passed the USA Patriot Act. This law provided the government with more power to gather information about suspected terrorists in the United States.
Critics said the law invaded constitutional rights to privacy. Civil liberties groups said the Patriot Act gave law enforcement and other agencies too much power. In January 2002, President Bush gave his State of the Union report to Congress. He accused some nations of supporting terrorist organizations. He said the United States would not wait to be attacked by such groups. Instead, it would strike first at the countries that sheltered them. The president identified three nations, North Korea, Iran, and Iraq, as supporters of terror.
States like these and their terrorist allies constitute an axis of evil, arming to threaten the peace of the world. By seeking weapons of mass destruction, these regimes pose a grave and growing danger. They could provide these arms to terrorists, giving them the means to match their hatred.
In 2002, the United States opened a detention center at its naval base at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. Some of the fighters arrested in Afghanistan were sent there. They were not considered prisoners of war. Instead, the detainees were treated as unlawful enemy combatants. As such, the Bush administration said they did not have the same rights as war prisoners under international treaties. In the United States, the government also detained some foreign citizens, mostly for violating immigration laws. No terrorism charges were brought against these detainees. Human rights activists and some legal experts protested the detentions. After 9/11, government agencies were criticized for failing to prevent the terrorist attacks. Critics said the agencies should have been working together to gather intelligence. Government officials said part of the issue involved legal restrictions on the gathering and sharing of intelligence. In January 2003, the Department of Homeland Security opened for business.
Maybe you see something suspicious, but you don't want to get involved. It's nothing, you think. Can you be sure?
There was a lot to do.
If you see something, say something. Report suspicious activity to local authorities.
Transportation security, immigration, law enforcement, border protection. It represented the biggest government reorganization in more than half a century. All or part of 22 federal agencies and departments were combined into the new agency. Its job, to keep America safe in a world that had changed in a single day. The War on Terror, which began after the 9/11 terrorist attacks on the United States, escalated in March 2003 when a coalition of American-led forces invaded Iraq. The mission, as stated by President Bush and British Prime Minister Tony Blair, was to disarm Iraq of weapons of mass destruction, to end Saddam Hussein's support for terrorism, and to free the Iraqi people.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.